It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Go. I forgot what I was going to talk about. I do that a lot, I know. Did I ever tell you about how I got tricked into paying a bunch of money for some Sherlock Holmes games?
No.
Alright. I'll talk about that then. So, you know how on the PlayStation they have sales?
Oh, on the PlayStation... I did notice you were playing some Sherlock Holmes games, but yes. Yeah, I know what you mean. Right.
They have sales. They have a lot of sales right around now. Like they have a Thanksgiving sale, and then they have a holiday sale, and then they have a New Year's sale. I'm sure they'll have a start of 2021 sale. A lot of sales. And they go and look. And for the most part, I'm not doing anything. If there's a game that I know I'm going to buy and I haven't yet and it's cheap, then sometimes I'll buy it if it's cheap enough. Every once in a while, I see something I didn't know existed. And I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. And again, if it's cheap enough, I might. So a couple of sales back, maybe the Thanksgiving one, I don't remember. There's a Sherlock Holmes game called Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter. And you look, and it's apparently you can go all over London, and there's different cases, and there's action and exploration and clues and mysteries and all sorts of stuff all together, and it costs $2.50. Mm. And it's down from like $30 or something. Mm. And I, as you may recall, just recently started GMing a game that is based on investigative stuff. And setting up mysteries and clues and stuff. So I'm like, you know what? This could prove useful. I might pick up some things from it. You know, we'll check it out. So I bought it. And then I looked in on it a little bit. And I found, I suspected this much. It doesn't have great reviews. Mm. Go figure. The game marked down to $2.50. Not great reviews. It's also a sequel to an earlier game called Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishments. And that game actually got pretty good reviews. Mm. And so I'm looking into that and I'm like, oh, do they have that? Yes, they have that. It costs $40. My brain's broken in that way. So of course I bought it. So because I saw this random game that probably wasn't any good for $2.50, I ended up spending $42.50.
Okay.
And I am almost finished. Like literally I stopped in near the end of the last case so that we could record this. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's not bad. It really has solidified my ongoing theory for years, which is that Sherlock Holmes does not do deductive reasoning. He's never done deductive reasoning. His thing is not deductive reasoning. His thing is entirely inductive reasoning. Mm. And while his famous line about when you removed everything impossible, whatever's left, however improbable, must be the truth, is an accurate deductive statement, that's never how he solves cases. I also very slowly had to learn some tricks about like how the game gives you subtle signals when you found all the clues in an area or on a thing, because I didn't know that originally. And consequently, the first two cases, I got stuck and I couldn't go forward. Like, at that point, even I like knew who it was, but I couldn't like tell the game that, because I was missing what turned out to be one clue in each of them. In the first one, there was a guy who was stabbed with a harpoon against the wall of a shack. And I had looked at it and talked about how it must take a really strong man to do that. But apparently, if I had moved slightly and examined some other part of the wound, I would have also noted that he was pinned to the wall. And that would have been important somehow. And then the other one was, I found out that this dude does a lot of betting. I found betting slips in his desk, which I'm like, hey, financial motive for being involved in this. But the game didn't give me a chance to confront him on it until I went back and flipped over the tickets so I could see they were for large amounts. And then I could think. So this game has taught me a lot in terms of how not to do things for my players. So I'm like, this annoyed the shit out of me. I'm not going to do it. Also, in this version, Dr. Watson is an absolute idiot. Just complete tool, just absolute disaster, to the point that by about halfway through the game, I would, because he would come along most of the time, whether I wanted him to or not. And I would go and talk to him just so I could say out loud, shut up, Watson. Like, for whatever he was saying. Like, anytime I was getting frustrated, I'd be like, Watson, what do you think? And I'd click on him and he'd start to talk. And I'd be like, shut up, Watson. Crack Trish up, because she's in the same room not paying attention. She just every once in a while hears me say, shut up, Watson. Because he's an idiot. But they're not bad. It's not the first one is not a bad game. I do find it interesting based purely on the trailer. I think the second game is going to be very different. The first game is very old school Jeremy Brett sort of Sherlock Holmes, and the next game from the look of it is very much inspired by Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes and a little bit Sherlock, I think. It's definitely a sexier looking game in a way that I think is probably really annoying. But, and I'm super condescending, it's, which I mean fits the character great, but sometimes I'm like, wow, I'm an asshole. But yeah, so it's been anyway. Yeah, so I got suckered into buying those, but I've been liking it okay. Anyway, hello everyone, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that really is having a hard time coping with the soon to be loss of 2020. It's been such a great time. I'm kidding, we all hate it. It feels unoriginal to be like, fuck 2020, but there's nothing else to say. Like, 2020, objectively, the shittiest of years. Like, it makes me miss 2016. Like, I would have taken a 2016 over this. And I hated 2016 pretty bad. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 511.
And by the time you all hear this, it might be New Year's. Some of you might be listening on New Year's Eve. It'll probably be up with about 5 hours to spare.
See, but that's an interesting thing that you're saying there, because I saw some things recently that makes me think there's some confusion around this, or it's there isn't, but I think about this stuff very differently, because I'm pretty sure the whole Eve thing, like New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, All Hallows Eve, comes from the tendency for people back in the day who didn't consider a day as starting at midnight, but a day started when the sun went down the previous day, right? So the reason we celebrate Christmas, New Year's Eve, for example, is because it's the evening. It's not the evening before New Year's. It's the evening of New Year's. Mm. When evening comes on the first, New Year's is over. New Year starts on the evening of the 31st. This is how people used to reckon days. And it was kind of tied to the church. The church mostly did it because in the Bible, when it talks about the 6 days of creation. It says there's evening and there's morning, and that's the first day, evening and morning, the second day. So the church thought of days as consisting of an evening first and then the rest. And that's why Orthodox Jews and Seventh-day Adventists, when they observe Sabbath, it starts when the sun goes down Friday on Friday.
Night. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of that Eve stuff that we do is about the holiday starting as soon as the sun goes down. So I think the sun is down now, or it's going to be. So it is New Year's. It's done. It's already New Year's by that measure. But
yes, but in another measure that like the world uses today, it'll be 2021 in exactly 6.5 hours from right now. He in our time zone.
Yes, in our central.
Craig's already done it, I'm sure. Craig's in 2021. Craig is in a completely different year from the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Do we have any listener? I don't think of us as having listeners on the East Coast. We have some on the West Coast, and we got a lot in Central.
Well, Jazz is on the East Coast.
Oh, is Jazz on the East Coast? Okay, I don't. Jazz is near DC, isn't she? Boston. Or in DC.
Boston.
Oh, Boston. Who the hell is Jazz? Well, I clearly don't know. I thought she was in DC. Oh, I don't know.
She's not like in the middle of Boston or something. She's in.
She's in Salem because she's a witch.
A suburb, I guess you could say.
A suburb of Boston.
I don't know if she'd call it a suburb, though. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, today's cities, it's really hard to kind of, it used to be a suburb was a very definite thing. I mean, you knew when you were in the suburbs versus somewhere else. Now it seems not so easy for me to tell, or maybe it's the same and it's just me. I don't know.
So this is the episode where you're just going to go full old man, but like really old man, because you're going back to like biblical times. Yeah, so far we got people that record days at the weird time. And in cities, you can't tell where the suburbs start.
I'm just saying.
How much was a candy bar when you were a kid?
Quarter. For a big one, too. I think they got smaller. And more expensive.
That's how they get you.
They were a quarter, though. I seem to recall. Because you could get refunds on bottles, like if the right bottles were a dime. So I would walk from the school to the market down that was in the, on the square at Melcher. And I would easily find enough bottles and stuff to get like a soda and a candy bar. So, because that was 50 cents. So I could find like 5 bottles to redeem 10 cents a piece and I could get.
Life was good.
Yeah, sure was.
For those of you just joining us right at the end of 2020, lovely choice. This is not going to make your year any better. We have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like you, yes, you, no, not you, you, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions. Things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them manifest physically within the hat itself. Its servants, draw the note cards out of, like I have a little timer in my head, and if I can't hit it, I just have to keep going. Draw the note cards at random out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That is the show, except for the parts that aren't, which is most of it. So I have a bacon finger. Which is really freaky because it's a cut that was bleeding heavily. And so I had to put, there's like 4 Band-Aids on here, but 3 of them are bacon. And so when I look at the wrong place, it looks like it's bleeding all over it because it's bacon.
Oh, I did. I thought maybe you just put it on there for decoration, but you actually cut yourself. That's terrible.
I did. Yeah, I was doing dishes. It was a dumb one too. So we have these tall glasses and they kind of taper inward, which already really dumb. But that's fine. I can take my little scrubby brush thing and I can sort of jam the bristles through and I jam it inside and then it's washed. In doing that today, I was jamming and I heard something like pop or whatever, but that was it. And I looked and there was a big V taken out and I couldn't see it anywhere because it had fallen in a shallow pan of water. So it was invisible, but it came out just in one piece. Don't know why it did it. And then I noticed that I had cut my finger. Ouch. And so then I go and I'm rinsing it and it wouldn't stop bleeding. It's definitely not deep enough for stitches. But it just wouldn't stop. So I was like, holding for a while. Then finally, I was like, okay, I've got some toilet tissue around it. And after a minute of pressure, I'm going to have Trish put a Band-Aid on me. I have these really good Band-Aids. So she did. But then I was like, oh, it's going to ooze or whatever. So I went out here and put a bacon Band-Aid on it. And then it still was a little sticking out the end. So I put a bacon Band-Aid over the top. But then to hold that in place, I put a bacon Band-Aid around it. Because
you'll never run out.
Of bacon Band-Aid.
That's right. Never gonna run out of those.
For Christmas. Now, we need to be fair about this. My mother-in-law, because there's a bit of a tradition in that side of the family, I like bacon things. My mother-in-law got me one box of bacon bandages.
Right, just one.
Online. It said one box. It was one box. One box of bacon.
Now, for those who aren't watching, it's like
it's a large box.
It's a box of boxes, is what it is.
It's a large box. It has little perforations to make it as a display item in your store because it is 15 box. No, wait, sorry, 12 boxes. I've been lying all this time. 12 boxes of bacon bandages in which there are a lot of bandages, like a basic box of Band-Aids, you know?
Band-Aid box, yeah.
Like you or plasters for Craig. But yeah, so you got them in here. And each comes with a prize, which I opened this one, and it's either a sticker or a temporary tattoo of a squirrel. So, but that being said, the bandages look like bacon, so it's pretty funny and they're pretty strong. So what did you get for Christmas, Mr. Man?
Oh, lots of things. I got some new slippers and I'm wearing them. Cool. Those are nice. But comic book. And then we got some stuff like for the house, like that we just, you know, splurged on a few things. But yeah, it's just regular stuff. Not Band-Aids, not bacon Band-Aids. Mm-mm.
I got blue suckers because I always get blue suckers. Because ever since I was very little, I would ask Santa for a blue sucker. Because they didn't make very many blue ones. And so my parents have made a tradition. So my mother didn't give me presents, except she sent me blue suckers. But my in-laws got me lots of stuff. I got a good gift card for thing. I got the aforementioned bacon bandages, a lot of candy. Possibly the coolest thing we got a new knife block of Martha Stewart knives.
Oh.
If you had asked me, I would say our current knife block is fine and I don't really need another one. I've never worked with knives like these. I like to think that the knives I have are fairly sharp. I am wrong. These knives are sharp, and all of that dumb shit that the cooking people on the TV tell you to do, make sure your knife is very sharp and then you can blah blah blah, blah, that you're like, it doesn't know, that's not how things work. It works when it's really really sharp. I can do some amazing. I can julienne root vegetables. I'm dicing garlic like nobody's business. I'm really good at dicing garlic. Like, I'm really good at it with the sharp enough knife.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about that. I'm very keen to figure out how to keep it that way. I don't know how that works, but yeah, these are really good. Yeah, but not too much. I mean, we bought ourselves that pan so that we could make Detroit style pizza, which was incredibly delicious and filling and took all day. Is not everything was from scratch. The sauce, the dough, everything. And Trish basically did it all. I chopped up the cheese because you don't shred it. You chop it up into little cubes, put it on top. But yeah, so it's like, make the dough, let it rest for a while. Come back, knead the dough, let it rise for a while. Come back, put it in the pan, stretch it out, let it rest for a while. Come back, stretch it out more. Then do something else with the dough. I don't remember. Then make the sauce. And that, like, there's so much stuff. And then, like, hours and hours of this. And then, yeah, then bake it for, like, 12 to 18 minutes. And it was super good. And we waited until then to watch Wonder Woman 1984 on Christmas afternoon. You also saw Wonder Woman 1984. At last I heard, twice you have seen it.
Three times now, yeah.
Three times now. All yeah. Right.
One of the things that we got, I was telling you, we got some things for the house. Most of these things were electronic items, and one of the things didn't work. So we had to send it back, and they had to send us a replacement. And it wasn't, it was a thing that, you know, went with the television sound thing. So when we got the replacement, we hooked it up. We watched Wonder Woman for a third time with arguably better sound. So,
So you've seen it three times.
Three times, yeah.
What'd you think?
The opinion in our house is generally favorable. So I think I told you this. We watched it the first time.
You did. For the record, for everybody, William and I have had fairly involved discussion about this film over text because we wanted to be able to talk about all the spoilers and everything, and we didn't want to do that here.
Right. So the first time we watched it, we liked it. Then we read a whole bunch of criticisms about it. We watched it again, and we felt pretty much the same. Our opinion didn't really improve, but it didn't necessarily go the opposite direction. And then when this sound electronic stuff got solved, we watched it a third time. And I think we both actually liked it a little bit better the third time.
It would be great if, like, and with the improved sound, we suddenly hated it. There's a whole bunch of really annoying noises that you can't catch unless you've got just the right sound equipment.
No, I think we actually liked it better the third time. And maybe the sound thing helped, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I think we actually liked it a little bit better in the third time. But it's not that we don't have any problems with it. We do.
You didn't love it from what you described.
Right, right. Some of the problems other people are having with it, we also had with it. But as often happens, we're not as bothered as other people. But overall, though, one thing, and I've said this to you, one thing that I'm kind of baffled about is when I look at the other people's criticisms and I go, okay, yeah, I understand that, or maybe I don't understand that. The thing I consistently don't get is how criticism X leads to hate level Y. Because it's like, I get that, but does that really normally lead people to hate it? Like, some of the criticisms are the same thing you'd see in any Marvel movie, for example, but nobody seems to, you know, ding those movies that much. It seems like when Wonder Woman does these things, like the standard for the Wonder Woman movie is like higher than.
Yeah. I think that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
I think that's entirely possible because there are two camps on these things. The people who think making female lead movies like this are shitty, like that we shouldn't do this and this is dumb, and so they love to find anything they can criticize and see it sucks because of this, or the people, and I probably fall into this camp, which probably screws up my biases, who really want it to be awesome. And it's very important to me. And when it's not, I'm way madder than I was when a Captain America movie is not awesome.
Well, you know, that's a good point, because I think if like Black Panther, for example, I think if it had had certain types of problems that people would totally forgive in an Iron Man or something, I think people would be more bothered in Black Panther, because like you just said, they don't want anything in there to take away from it, basically. Because
yeah, it feels like a lot is riding on it.
And that's right.
And this is the thing we have discussed, and I am willing to go this far, and I need to state, okay, there's a few things I need to say up front. I did not like the Wonder Woman movie.
No.
Quite a bit did not like it. Neither did my wife. Based on her reaction, she might have disliked it more than me, but I'm not sure. And you know how bad I am about talking about it. But I very much did not like it. I need to make the disclaimer that other than Wonder Woman, I have not seen any DC superhero film since Superman Returns, which actually I will also add to the list of films that is probably worse than Wonder Man 1984. I forgot about that. I frequently forget about Superman Returns, but like I never saw Man of Steel. I never saw any of the Zack Snyder bullshit. I never saw Aquaman or Shazam or any of that. So there's a lot of them I haven't seen. However, of the movies I've seen, I am willing to say Superman Returns, the first and second Thor movies, and Dark Knight Rises are all worse than Wonder Woman 1984. I'm not conclusively saying that's where it goes next on the list, but I am not willing to commit to saying any others. I thought it was very bad. I thought it was in my top, my bottom five. I thought it was quite bad. However, the movies I just listed that I say are worse, I was not nearly as upset after watching them as I was after watching this. Well, I was angry at the quality of this, even though the quality was better than those movies.
And not only that, but I think all of the movies you mentioned, maybe with the exception of Superman Returns, have higher Rotten Tomatoes scores, like significantly higher.
Yeah.
Except maybe the first Thor movie. But since you and I talked, actually, Wonder Woman's number went down. Okay. So
I find it dangerous to look at those scores over time. Because, I mean, I walked out of Dark Knight Rises thinking it was halfway decent. I have since then realized no. And again, what's writing it on the time? And it's entirely possible that I could see this movie a ways away from now and not find it so bad. But it's also entirely possible that today I could watch either of the Thor movies and not find them that bad. I think it's dangerous over that period of time to do it. But I freely admit a bias here because I really want it to work to the degree that I was reevaluating as the movie was going on. I started like pretty early on. I'm like, this is not as good as the first Wonder Woman.
Right.
And then it was going on and I'm like, well, you know, it's a solid middle of the road superhero movie, you know, I could, you know, and that's fair. Like, why does this have to be bad? But by the end, I'm like, no, this is just bad. This is a bad movie. There's a lot of reasons. In fact, way more than I realized when I sent just the big ones to William. I ended up, I believe, having 11 points in it.
12, but, I think.
Okay, maybe 12. I thought they made Diana look terrible as a person. I thought the story was bad and also frequently did not make sense. A lot of stuff just ties into those two things. And I mean, those are two pretty big things.
Well, for me, there was really only one thing I remember. There was only one aspect of the story that I found that made Diana look bad. Most of the rest of the time, I thought she was fine. I didn't really feel like the story was particularly messy. I don't know. I some of the issues that you had, I just didn't have. It seemed fine to me. And
you like agreed with a surprisingly large number of them. No, I was a little surprised. They were just things that didn't upset you as much.
Right, mostly.
Because you went point by point, yeah. Which was not my intention.
I know, but another thing about
it confused me after a while. I'd be like, point eight. You're like, yeah, I get that. It just wasn't as much. I'm like, what the hell was point eight? I have to scroll back. Like, what did I say?
I felt like one of the things I appreciated about it was, I don't know if this was intentional, but I've noticed this all three times we watched it. I really feel like there's a connection between this movie and the Linda Carter Wonder Woman movies in a good way that I like and that really resonates with me as someone who likes those old shows and has seen them recently.
I saw a couple a few years ago, and then before then it was way back when I was a kid. But yeah, I didn't feel any of that.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a nostalgia aspect to that. But yeah, I mean, we'll probably see it. We might even watch it tonight. I don't know. But we like it being on TV to watch, actually. That's another cool thing. It's like, wow, we could just watch this as much as we want before it's gone. And I don't know. It's just fun to be able to watch a Wonder Woman movie. And to us, it's perfectly fine. It's not as good as the first one, but it doesn't like bother us or anything. So we like watching it.
Fun fact, the main bad guy in it is the Mandalorian. And also, the coworker with the ponytail who wishes for coffee, is Assam Chowdhury, who's a British comedian who I know and am rather fond of.
I thought that was
that was fun.
That whole bit was kind of cute. Him wishing for coffee.
It was a neat little cameo, and yeah, and it was a funny little joke there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Pedro Pascal, the Mandalorian, is the bad guy in this. Nothing like the Mandalorian. Especially because you can see his face all the time.
If there was one thing I could do, if they would let me script doctor the thing, I can think of one thing I would do that would fix probably 60 to 70% of the problems right away. And then the rest of the problems, smoothing out the script to fix the first fix, which is, yes. I would take Steve Trevor out of it completely.
Yes, yes. Which, I mean, no spoilers. You see in the trailers,
right.
Steve Trevor is in this somehow, which you'll find out.
I would take him out.
Yeah, completely. And you've talked about it before, and I don't disagree. That, I mean, we might disagree on the percentages, but I mean, his presence and her interaction with him is a lot of what I think makes Diana look bad. Also, yes, here's an interesting little tiny bit, and I think this is interesting to tell you since you're going to watch it like 12 more times. The opening sequence is a flashback. Mm-hmm. Won't talk about it. But a great deal of it, in particular, young Diana's interaction with her mother seems to completely contradict the relationships and the setup we established in the first film. The whole way people interact with each other there. I mean, because there were some very specific sort of family issues built in to the start of the first Wonder Woman. And this seems to undercut them pretty heavily, in my opinion. Again, don't want to give spoilers, but.
I'm not sure what things you're talking about there, but.
Yeah. But that, I mean, struck me as weird. Just from the beginning. Also, one of the early scenes is an action scene set in a mall, and there is a small girl named Courtney. She's my favorite character in it, so watch out for her. She's great.
You know, a lot of the when I was saying I would take Steve out of it and that would solve this many problems, and then smoothing out the story with him gone would solve this many problems, there are a lot of critics who actually agree with my with that general assessment, except they would take out somebody else. They would take out Maxwell Lord, or they would take out.
I've heard people say there's a couple villains in this movie, because that's how sequel superhero movies always are. And I'm willing to give them a pass for that, because it's dumb, but literally every superhero movie does it for some reason. But yeah, I have people. What's funny is I've seen different people. People have different opinions on which they think is the main villain, which I find interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's, yeah. And based on what I have seen, mixed is the real answer for this movie. I think there have been very mixed review. I've seen people who absolutely love it, and I've seen people who hate it way more than me. It seems to be a very polarizing movie. And I think a lot of it is a lot of people cared a lot about it and wanted it to prove something or do something. And so some of them are willing to forgive a lot because they want it to be good. And some of them are not willing to forgive a lot because they demand that it be something. And I think I fall in there too. I said at the time, and I stick by it, that I hoped a lot of people would see it and that it was very successful, because I want more of these. These being Wonder Woman movies and female-led superhero movies and female-directed superhero movies. I don't have a problem with anybody involved in the making of it. If you had not shown me the credits, I probably would have told you Patty Jenkins didn't direct this. But I'm not upset with her for directing this. And we both expressed concern that the complaints it had might lead for them not to make a third one. That appears to not be an issue. Warner Brothers has already talked about, they are super excited with the results, and they are fast tracking the third movie.
The box office exceeded anybody's expectations.
Still being kind of low because of COVID, but way better. Yeah, it kicked the shit out of what Tenet did, for example.
Right, but consider about twice as many theaters were open when Tenet opened, and the pandemic was kind of, a lot of people thought the pandemic was kind of on the decrease at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now only half as many theaters are open. The pandemic is considered by most people to be more severe, and yet her numbers blew Tenet away, like three times higher or something.
And crazy numbers on HBO Max, which. You're like, that's well, right. They're already paying for it. But yeah, some people, I know people who are seriously considering getting HBO Max so they can watch this. So I'm sure there are people that have. So Warner Brothers is excited, and they're totally heading for the third one.
By the way,
that's good.
Aquaman's Rotten Tomatoes scores are still at about the same level that Wonder Woman's are now. And of course, Aquaman made $1 billion. So...
Yes.
We don't really know how Wonder Woman's going to do until her run is done or whatever, because her Rotten Tomatoes scores could be bad, and there could be a lot of bad buzz in the press, and yet she could still do really well. So.
I mean, Batman v Superman broke $1 billion, I'm pretty sure. It at least got to 800 million something.
Yeah, it didn't. I don't think it did make $1 billion, but yes, it was up there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Critical scores and even audience scores don't necessarily translate into box office.
Joker, Joaquin Phoenix and Joker, the Rotten Tomatoes scores in that are still bad, and yet it made $1 billion. So
and wasn't it nominated for Academy Awards?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Yeah, so we don't really know.
Yeah, and no, Twitter is full of people who want to talk about Wonder Woman, and it is decidedly mixed how they want to talk about it.
Yeah,
but I think it's bad, but you should see it. because more people should see it, so then they can make more of them, because this is what I want. I want a lot of female-directed movies and female-led superhero movies, so that sometimes you make bad ones, and sometimes you make good ones, and sometimes you make wacky ones, and sometimes you make awesome ones, just like with dudes.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's so weird how these conversations go. It's like male directors make bad movies all the time, and it's not a thing we have to talk about.
On the other hand, I don't want them to make any more Batman movies. Because there's nothing left to do. Actually, that is kind of true. But even more strongly, I don't want them to make any more Joker movies. We have literally done every version of Joker we could, including Harley Quinn, which you're like, well, it's a different thing. Yeah, see the movie. It's really not. Oh, see, that's another one I got to throw in there. This movie kicked the shit out of the Harley Quinn movie, except for those last 15 minutes. Those last 15 minutes of the Harley Quinn movie are one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen. But the rest of it was hot garbage.
Yeah.
Somebody should have put that up on YouTube, just because you can find, like, I found the opening credits to Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I love, on YouTube. I found all the Avengers get together at the end of Endgame thing that I love. Somebody should just have the last 15 minutes of Harley Quinn movie up on YouTube that I can just watch that.
Another thing that I have said to some people about this movie is that, I've been consuming, movie critic material since I was a little kid. I mean, I was a huge fan of Siskel and Ebert and stuff like that. And one thing that I've noticed over the years when people critique things is how often they'll talk about how the audience they were with responded to something. And it's really made me think that there are some critics, I don't know if this is true for all critics necessarily, but there are some critics who are deeply influenced by what the audience is doing when they go see the movie. Maybe they don't want to admit that sometimes, but I think that's sometimes true. And I think when it comes to superhero movies, probably especially, it might be easier to forgive stupid little things in the movie that all the superhero movies have. But when you're sitting at home by yourself and you're watching it as a critic, it's harder to forgive the things you've forgiven when in the theatrical releases, because there's nobody around you oohing and aahing or laughing or crying. And you're like, I think you might tend to be harder on it than you would with the other
movie. I think that's true. Well, and also, when something was really dumb, I could make a joke about it right at the time. And I did several times. And I think that is the thing, because like I said, there have been a lot of movies I left the theater thinking I really liked, and then later was like, and I could definitely see that being a thing in this. However, I do eventually find the same water level. Like, sometimes I see a movie that I think is good as I leave the theater, and then usually by the time I've driven home, I'm like, well, and then by the next day or two, I'm like, actually, but I always get to the same place. So it is entirely possible that this movie, had I seen it in the theater, I would have liked it a lot more in the moment. I think I still would have gotten to this place.
Well, I just wonder if the Rotten Tomatoes score would be at least in the 70s or something.
The epitome of subjective.
Yeah.
Like, that is not, except in its extremes, I consider the Rotten Tomatoes scores useless. And until you're below 35 or above 95, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
And even then, sometimes I disagree. But yeah, I mean, critics especially, because some critics are very much, here is how I felt about this movie. Other critics are like, here is how I think the average viewer will feel about this movie, because they're trying to do a service. And let's be completely honest, you will not be a successful critic as an occupation if you tend to bring in mediocre review. If you tend to be like, it was all right.
Well,
way more successful for your career if you really like it or really don't like it.
Sure. It just seemed like a lot of the criticisms I read were, like, so, I mean, I could have sworn the people who didn't like this movie must not like any superhero movies, because all of their criticisms were like, this is what superhero movies are like. but I'm quite certain most of these people saw these things in other superhero movies and didn't complain about them that much, or didn't ding those movies as hard for those things. It just seems weird.
And it could be for a lot of the reasons that we've mentioned. Also, movies can have the same flaw, but handle them better.
Yeah,
there are
true.
Movies that have had immense story issues that I later was aware of, but I still loved it because they hit it with some awesome dialogue and action and shit like that.
Sure,
This movie is incredibly unquotable. There's maybe two or three spots, and it wasn't going for that. This is a Marvel trick that they've been doing since the first Avengers, I think. Quips. There's so many quips in Marvel movies, and if they're good, you can forget a lot of shit. You just remember that funny line. This movie did not have any lines like that to save it. It had a couple of moments in a jet plane that had some good lines. But I mean, that was a total of like a minute and a half. And also, that scene was pissing me off for completely different reasons at the same time. So that's the problem, is the same flaw doesn't necessarily translate the same depending on what is surrounding it and how it is done.
Mm-hmm.
And how well they hide it. Some movies are like, oh yeah, this looks like a big dead end, but and other ones are just like, look, there's no dead end. I don't know what you're talking about. Brick wall? I didn't see it. Let's go.
Sure,
like some movies are like, yeah, you're not even trying. And other movies is like, you know what? You put up a good effort to hide your bullshit. It's still there. I can smell it, but you know. Pretty colors distracted me, so it varies. But yeah, no, I mean, I freely admit a lot of things wrong with this movie are wrong with a lot of superhero movies, this was always going to be an issue more than with other movies, because the first Wonder Woman movie might not be that great, but we all think it is. Because it was new and it was doing a thing that like a lot of them weren't. Speaking of Wonder Woman 1984, in general, also was not filmed from a male gaze, but it had moments. It had moments that I actually caught that just, I was like, oh God, no, this is how dudes would film this. And that was disappointing. But that's what I'm talking about. There was something magical about Wonder Woman, and part of it was because it was treading new territory. Hmm. And this movie almost couldn't have been doing that. And so it's always going to suffer the comparison. Even if it was just like the first Wonder Woman, it would still suffer because we've seen it, you know?
Sure.
Like, it can't be the first X a second time. And part of what we all loved about Wonder Woman was it was the first X in several cases.
Well, and that's another thing that I've said to a few people, is that when you look at Iron Man, which I still regard as one of the best superhero movies
ever made. Iron Man's really good. Again, covering brand new territory.
Iron Man 2 was quite a letdown by comparison. But see, to me, Iron Man 2 wasn't less of a letdown than the second Wonder Woman was. But people are treating the second Wonder Woman like it was a polar opposite letdown. And, you know, to me, again, it seems like it's fine for people to criticize it. Of course, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but it just seems like they would be criticizing it on the level that they criticized Iron Man 2 by comparison, not like trashing it and pushing
it. How does Rotten Tomatoes for Iron Man 2 compare to this?
I believe that it's like in the 70s, I think, whereas Iron Man was in the 90s or something. That's what I say.
Iron Man 2 is in the 70s, really?
I think so. Wow. And that's why I say I wouldn't personally put Wonder Woman in the 70s. I would have it in the 80s, but I could understand it being in the mid-70s, say. I could understand that. But it's like 61 was the last time I looked. Like, this getting really close to not even having a Fresh Tomato anymore. I just can't. you could not have been that bad. I think if I were to look at all these critics and I was to compare their criticism of this movie to movies that I think are similar, that they're not rating those movies the same. Like they're somehow being harsher with this movie. And if their standards are different, that's fine, because here's another thing. I think people's standards toward DC movies in general are more strict, not because of some weird conspiracy or something, but because I think people take DC characters more seriously than they take Marvel characters in general. I think
The filmmakers certainly do.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think the culture
and Marvel carries a lot of you've got a lot of buy-in just from the previous Marvel movies that you're bringing to the table. So like movies that I'm like, this is kind of shitty for a Marvel movie, but it ticked all the boxes. It's fine.
Well, like with Thor, they completely changed the tone of Thor's character and everything in, eventually. And then, of course, that third movie was very successful. I can't think of how you could do that with a DC character, how you could just completely flip the tone, flip everything over, because I think people would be upset that you mishandled the character and
weird things like that. You call it Shazam.
Well, my point is, I think not just the filmmakers, but I think audiences take DC characters more seriously for some reason. Like they're more sacrosanct.
No, it's because they're taking their top characters.
Yeah.
Marvel is a very big thing that when the MCU started, these were not the top tier characters because they didn't have the rights to the top tier characters. Mm. They sold them to Universal. When you look at Spider-Man's people's responses to the various Spider-Mans over the years is way closer to the DC versions.
Yeah, right. Right.
And that's because of the top tier ones. They took ones that only the hardcore nerds would have concerns about their character. When Iron Man came out, who's going to be like, you can't do that to Iron Man? Don't get me wrong. There are like five dudes who I'm sure were like that. And I'm also pretty confident that Iron Man in the first Iron Man movie was not like most of the versions they've had in the comics, but it was fucking Iron Man, who now sounds awesome and has his own giant enterprise out there in the world. But at the time, not a big deal. Mm. And they took a lot of those. And they had trouble because they took a big one. They took Hulk. Hulk's pretty big. Didn't work out so well for him.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I also think that nobody, when they're making their Rotten Tomatoes critique, be they critic or person, I don't think they go, let's look back at what ratings I gave similar movies in past
year. I realize that.
What I mean is, people who are giving Wonder Woman a worse score might still tell you, yeah, I think I'd put it on par with Iron Man 2, and I really didn't like Iron Man 2. But if they went back and looked, they gave Iron Man 2 a higher score at the time.
I think
you're doing something that the people who are giving the critiques are not doing. And so they're just going with their gut at the moment. But
why is their gut at the moment so angry? It just seems like more anger
for the reasons that we've discussed. Also, a lot of people aren't angry about it. I've seen a lot of ones that are just like, it's so-so, and some people who think it's really awesome.
I've seen one person say it's mediocre, just one, and very few people say that it's awesome. Most of the things that could be a selection bias on my part. Might be.
I mean, because I tend to frequently trust AV Club, and they came out, I think it was a solid B-, and they were like, it's not great.
Interesting. But they weren't. Okay.
I haven't read the review. I just read from the little blurb.
Beginning. I mean, I'll just put in.
And Twitter's full of people who love it.
Yeah, I'll just put in Wonder Woman 1984 in Google and then click the news link and just read whatever's at the top. And it's almost always not just negative, like really negative. Maybe that's Google's just letting that stuff float to the top. I don't know.
Maybe go to Rotten Tomatoes and click on those reviews.
I did that too, but I mean, then I end up, I mostly look at, you know, the positive ones, because I don't want to read the negative ones, really. I'm trying to force myself to see things at other people's perspective, you know. And so, and I also want to see what comes at the top of the search results, I guess, because I still think that matters, but it probably doesn't anymore.
I'm not fully sure what any of this matters in particular, but we, as I said, we've discussed the what I think are probably the main reasons why people are like that, because it for good reasons and bad reasons, this movie mattered to them a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie mattered to me more than any MCU movie. Which is weird to say, because I thought I had a lot riding on Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel didn't come out great, but I was okay with it. And again, I think it was because I very clearly could see it as an MCU movie. And I was like, I wish they could have done more than a generic, you know, this could be Iron Man 4. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be, but this, I wanted this to be something great. And it, I really was not. And I was, like I said, I was mad at the time. If I had written a review then, it would have been really bad. But I'm aware enough to know, first of all, I don't write reviews. I talk about them on my podcast. But I also was enough to know that at the moment, like, there was a lot going on in me. I found it interesting. I have a friend who we don't agree on much. And she tends to like anything that has a strong female character in it. And I don't even mean the lead. I mean, like, a movie could be hot shit. I mean, just absolute disgusting, terrible movie. And if there's a female character in it that's, like, cool and gets to do good stuff and doesn't get, like, fridged or raped or anything, she'll be like, oh, it had some problems, but I just really liked so-and-so. So, like, I was confident she'd love this. And we frequently, I've said before, she's really good at honing in on the one thing to like on stuff, or sometimes the one thing to dislike. But like in this giant painting, she'll be very focused on this one bit of the frame. And if she really loves that bit of the frame, it's okay. Or if she really hates that bit of the frame, the whole thing's trash. And so she and I fight a lot on this stuff. And I've learned to sort of not bother, because we just come from very different places. And frankly, I'm a little envious of her ability. But so we watch Wonder Woman, same day she's watching it, because it's Christmas Day. It came out. We all watched it that day. And I'm texting my friends and I'm like, damn it. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I really wanted to love this and I really don't. I'm really mad about it. And people are saying different things. And she's like, this was the thing and this was the thing. And it's, I still liked it. It's not what I hoped for, but I definitely still liked it. Had I argued the point, I am confident she would have pushed back, and it really would have sort of solidified it for her as something she liked, essentially in defiance of my aggressive response,
sure.
Which I totally understand. Because I've been practicing this lately, chose to not, all I said was legitimate, I'm kind of envious of you because I wish I liked it better. And that was it. I didn't argue with it because there wasn't a point, because I can learn slowly. Next morning, she tweets us, or she texts us all, and she's like, I thought about this and this too now, and this was actually really bad, and now I'm mad. And I was like, whoa. So left to her own devices, it bugged her, but I thought that was very interesting. And I also felt a little bit guilty. I'm like, maybe I should have fought with her, because then it would have, you know, held a better place in her heart.
Well, there are definite things about it that bothered us more as time went on.
Yeah.
But there were also things that we liked more as time went on. So it just ended up being a wash.
Also, this is a terrible thing, but I want to throw it out here for the sake of parody. I'm going to say something very superficial that I noted that is just sticking with me now. And I mean, and I apologize to him. Hopefully he never hears this, but I don't think Pedro Pascal is a particularly good looking man. I thought it was the mustache in The Mandalorian, because I hate, there are only two men in the world that I like with just a mustache, Tom Selleck and Nick Offerman. But in this, he didn't have one. I just don't think he's that attractive of a man.
Okay.
It gets said about women all the time. People have to talk about this bullshit. So I had the thought and I was like, you know what? Let's give some balance here. I'm just not doing it for me. Pedro Pascal, not hitting my buttons. I'm sorry, mister. You still seem like a great guy. We can hang out, but it won't lead to anything.
It won't lead to anything.
I mean, Chris Pine. Let's talk. Chris Pine, the best Chris, as voted by the public.
Really?
Yep. Chris Pine's the best Chris. Chris Pratt is the worst Chris. Hemsworth is usually just called Hemsworth, not Chris. So, and Evans is the socially active, or the social justice active Chris. I don't know. But yeah, no, people think Chris Pine is the best Chris and Chris Pratt is the worst Chris. Chris Pratt being the worst Chris seems largely to be tied to being a member of Hillsong Church and people theorizing based on certain views he's expressed and choices he's made that he might be a Republican.
I thought it was because they think the church supports conversion therapy or whatever.
I mean, that's part of Hillsong Church is an absolute disaster. And in fact, in recent weeks, so many scandals have come out about it. And it's just there's a lot of fucked up things about it. But yeah, that is one of them. There's a lot of reasons to not like that church.
But you think that people rate him poorly because of it, they think he's a Republican?
That also appears to be some of the stuff. Again, I'm just talking about what the random gossip mill has going. I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. You understand that, right?
No, I do. Yeah, but okay. I thought everybody knew he was a Republican. What they objected to was the notion that he might be anti-gay or something.
No, different people object to different things.
Okay.
But when people complain about Chris Pratt in the same world that they rate Chris's, these are the two general concepts that come up most for it.
Okay.
I honestly don't know why Pine is considered the best. See, and it can't be fuckability, because on a different day I would take different of the four of them depending on my mood. Like, those are four choice Chris's to pick from, and it would just depend on my mood. Some days I want the hair. Some, you know, the abs are all generally the same situation, but yeah, no, I don't, it's hard to say, but yeah. I don't know. I haven't met any of them. Or Pedro Pascal. I never heard of Pedro Pascal until The Mandalorian. He's very good. He's a good actor.
I think the first I heard of him, he was in one of those King's Man movies or whatever.
Oh, was he? See, I only watched that first one, and I don't, and maybe he was in it. I don't know.
He was in the second one. He was,
oh, okay.
But I think I'd seen him in something else even before that, because I think he was in some cable, made for cable TV show or something, wasn't he? Like, yeah. I think I'd heard of him before. I hadn't seen the show he was in, and then he was in that movie. And then he was in Mandalorian. That's how I recollect it.
Speaking of television, we just finished the fourth season of Fargo.
Mm.
The one with Chris Rock and Jason Schwartzman.
I guess I didn't even know it was out there.
Yeah. It is the first, chronologically, in the whole thing, because technically the TV show exists in the same universe as the original Coen Brothers movie. Things that come up in the first season of Fargo, you can figure that out. And so the chronological order of the whole thing is the fourth season, the second season, the movie, the first season, the third season. And what's even more interesting is overall, it tells the story essentially of an organized crime syndicate in that area and its sort of evolution over the years. Because all of these sort of tie into it to a certain degree. But there's also lots of characters that tie in. You see characters in earlier ones when they're younger, and then they show up later older, or their son shows up and things like that, which is very interesting. And in fact, as soon as we finished it, we watched a YouTube video where somebody had put together all the connections. Season 4 has in particular some very big ones. I mean, if you like the Fargo TV show, then yeah, watch it. It's good on that, on those merits. It does some, it surprises you in some ways, in some things that, like, especially for me, I was like, you know what, in every season of this, there's always this kind of character and this happens. And then we had this kind of character and that did not happen. Or like, this is always the good guy kind of kid. No, this time it's a bad guy. This guy's going to die here. No, he didn't die there. But it still has its good share of Coen Brothers bullshit. And at least one person dies through a complete random accident. Trish said out loud, "I didn't see that coming." And I'm like, you absolutely could not have. Like, it was literally something accidental that happened, like the equivalent of somebody stumbled and died. Like, it was very much, I'm like, yeah, no, by definition, you couldn't have seen that coming. But yeah, it still throws that kind of stuff in. And you know, to paraphrase the Player King from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, the good end unhappily, the bad end unluckily, that is what tragedy means. And it's got its fair share of that. And you get to see Chris Rock acting, like for real acting. There is nothing comedic about his role. He is very serious, older head of a crime family. It's a thing. And there's also a character in it who I'm just really mad about because he was good, but it would have been so much better if they'd cast Jack Black. Like, he's an Italian character, but he's like this far away from being Jack Black's character in Nacho Libre. Like, it's so, and his face just looks like it. And every time, like, his eyes bug out and he gets really mad, I'm like, Jack Black could have done so much with this. So I was disappointed about that. But, and Glenn Turman, very prolific Black actor who some of you may know as Dr. War from A Different World. That's how I first knew him, but he's been in a ton of stuff. He's a great actor. He has a great role in this too. So yeah, check that out. I'm going through the current season of Doctor Who. That's been weird. I have finished Assassin's Creed Odyssey 3 times so far. Damn thing has more endings than the Return of the King movie. Like I finished a plot line and the game was like, now you can play New Game Plus if you want. Start a new game and have all this. And then I went and fought the last bad guy. And then I was looking up the DLC to find out like what order, because there's a lot of DLC. And I'm like, what order did it come out in? I want to play it in that order. And I find out that what I thought was a DLC item is actually still part of the main storyline. So I went and I finished that. And I mean, at this point, I've had like 4 or 5 different things where me and other major characters look out on the ocean and like reminisce about how our lives have gone. Like a bunch of times. And now I'm already on another one because we finished a thing and then one of my guys got a letter that his parents died and the quest is called Every Story Has an Ending. So I'm like, all right, so we got at least a 4th ending coming before I start on any DLC. So, the last one I had it had the modern part because there's always a modern part involved. We wrapped that up enough that the modern character was like, I still have so many questions. I should go back in and see some more stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's called DLC. So we've had that ending. So I've had a lot of endings, but I'm still playing it. Weirdly, I don't know what happened, but recently I've really gotten back into it and really kind of enjoyed it. So I'm playing that a lot.
That's good.
I think that's it. I don't know what we'll watch next. It might be His Dark Materials because the second season of that just finished and we kind of like the first season. So we'll see about that. We've been wanting to do The Marvelous Miss Maisel for a long time. And that sounds like a fairly positive one. So that might be a good one to do now. COVID combined with my standard seasonal affective disorder means I am heading into some depressive fucking months right now. I'm starting to feel it for the shit ton of snow we had yesterday.
Yeah.
And the shit ton of snow we may get tomorrow. Doesn't look as bad, but we might still get some tomorrow.
Hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, during the day tomorrow, there's good chances of snow. I don't think it'll be like what we had. That was crazy. But messed up my knee shoveling, actually.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, I'm not happy about that. But it is a lot better when I woke up, so I'm hoping that that means each day. And hopefully by tomorrow, I can get back to my exercise. All right, enough of my life. We're going to find a question. We're over time, but I feel like we've been wussing out on questions a lot lately. So here's one. It's a unicorn. I say that because it's a question from Beth that has not been abridged or summarized.
Okay.
Which is funny because it has et cetera in it, which is usually something that the hat would put in it, that. But I guess she sort of abridged herself. Oh, this is about sandwiches again. And we've talked about sandwiches recently. This is a little bit different or a little bit more specific even. What's the best layering method for building a sandwich when wet / slippery toppings are involved, e.g. tomatoes, pickles, etc.?
I just don't even know. I mean, because when I have those things on a sandwich, they always slip off. I can't figure out what to do with them.
I have a very weird relationship with these things. I'm very ambivalent about tomatoes as a whole. I will never just put them on a sandwich. I might eat them on a sandwich that comes with them, but I would never put them on a sandwich. Tomatoes are the worst, I think, for that. They are constantly falling apart.
Yeah.
And pickles, usually when I've got them, they're like on a burger, which means there's just a small group right in the middle. So it doesn't really fucking matter. Again, would never put them on a sandwich automatically. I do have a thing with burgers that have, like, if I get a Whopper from Burger King, I take the sandwich, I unwrap it, I lift off the thing, I eat the tomatoes, and I eat the pickles, and then I put the thing back on and eat the rest of it. And traditionally, I've always done that with pickles, because a lot of fast food sandwiches, even a lot of burgers that don't have other cool toppings have pickles. And I like pickles. I don't particularly like them on a burger, so I just eat them off. In my limited experience of that, lettuce, depending on the kind of lettuce, can give you some good traction. And that can be helpful. It's also going to depend on your sauce condiments. Because I think frequently when you go out to a place and that happens, it's because there's too much other liquid nearby. And that's I personally think it would be easier if you chopped them. Has anybody ever done that? Chop up tomatoes and put them on kind of like a relish? I feel like that would be good.
I don't know.
And of course, they make kinds of pickles now that are sort of built for that, like that'll cover the whole thing kind of one.
I mean, I've gotten to the point now where if I go to a restaurant and I get, you know, you can get fake burgers just about anywhere these days.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That they almost always come with like a steak knife or whatever. And I won't even pick it up. I'll just eat it, you know, cut it into pieces and eat it like that. I don't even bother because it's just all going to fall out.
No, you are correct. And depending on the size of it, I may start by eating it as a burger, but I just do that until it falls apart. Yeah, and then I'm like, okay, right. now we're knife and forking it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and I always think it's so weird, and I need to do a study on this. I need to pay attention to people, but you'll go to places and their burgers are huge and that's their thing.
Yeah.
And after a certain point, it's like the mouth isn't big enough for, if you're not a snake or a pelican, this is not a thing.
Yeah.
So, and that's part of both of the joke, because people are like, or, you know, like, well, clearly we're giving you your money's worth because it's more than your mouth can hold.
Right.
No, because you could do it, whatever. But then what? Like, we still got to eat it. So yeah. Do most people do it that way?
I don't know. I mean, that
it seems like they pick it up and they try and they like take a bite from this side and then from this side. And I'm like, that's not a sandwich. Like, what are you doing? So what do you people do, listeners, when you get like a big honking, like too tall kind of sandwich?
Well, I will say this. I know people who, if it's a hamburger, well, if it's most things, their strategy is to melt cheese over it. It just sort of seals it in.
Yeah, but they won't do that with like tomato and stuff like that.
I mean,
and all that, in my opinion, that only postpones it. Like, you're taking a bite and the cheese holds, but at some point it's going to go, and then literally everything is going to come out with it out the back, and then you're just eating buns. And I will say, some places, especially if it's sort of uniform, like Arby's, I go to Arby's and I get a sandwich and they're pretty tall. Frequently, what I will do is I'll take it off and I will just eat individual shreds, because it's just a wad of roast beef that's been very thinly sliced, you know, and they just sort of, and I'll just eat some of it until there's like a reasonable amount left, and then I put it back on and eat it like a sandwich. But I have always considered these behaviors to be like that of a monster. Like, I'm also the guy who individually picks the toppings off a slice of pizza and then eats the cheese off the pizza. And then if there's enough sauce for it, licks the sauce off with my finger and then eats the crust. I'm a lunatic. So I have never known what normal people do with these giant monstrosities. So normal people, don't listen to this podcast. The listeners who are the closest we know to normal people, what do you do with them? And tell us in the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, doesn't have to be about sandwiches. I mean, it's fine. If you've got more sandwich questions, bring them in. But anything, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And we'll talk about it here so you don't have to. That's what this should really be for. If you're like, you know what? This is a topic I've been curious about, but I'm too good to talk about it because it's ridiculous to want to have a conversation about this. Like, I couldn't look my friends in the eye and say, let's talk about this, because it's stupid. I would never deign to turn to my partner and say, can we talk about this? Because they might leave me. It's terrible. Nobody should want to have a conversation about this, but I do, but I know well enough not to. Send it to us. We'll have a conversation about it. William might not want to, but I'll still do it.
Or you might not want to. I mean, some things I'm perfectly happy to talk about that you don't want to talk about.
Only because I'm bored.
That's what I mean, bored.
Yeah, you know, I'll deal with it.
I'll talk about a lot of boring things.
Bored. You will. Don't write in about boring shit, people.
Write about all the boring things, you guys. Anything that you think you just look like a bore if you talk about it, I'll talk about it.
And send us more on personalized toilet behavior, please.
Tony will hate it. I'll love it. And I'll love it because he hates it.
Or combine all of them together perfectly. Like, if you were going to take a shit on Oak Island, like, where would, you know, these kind of things.
Hmm.
If you were trying to poop into the money pit.
No, that would bother me more than you.
And I wouldn't be bored. I wouldn't be bored.
Okay.
Anyway, write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com and come talk to us at themagicaltalkinghat.com and tell us your sandwich things and where you think Oak Island poops.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.